Congress set to begin tallying the votes for president and vice president in the May 9 polls. The incoming heads of the labor and migrant worker departments lay out their plans under the Marcos administration. Later on in the program, we'll ask incoming Justice Secretary Congressman Boying Remulla about his priorities at the DOJ. Leading presidential Bedford and Marcos Jr. open to reviving the Philippines' nuclear energy program. We'll discuss that with the Energy Transition Advisor of the Institute for Climate and Sustainable Cities, Alberto Daluzong III. And the chief of the International Monetary Fund says the global economy is now facing its biggest challenge since World War II. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, Philippine lawmakers convene at the Batasang Pambansa to tally the votes for president and vice president in the May 9 polls. During the canvassing, the joint committee must make sure the number of votes for each candidate in the electronically transmitted certificates of canvass and in the physically delivered COCs are identical. Lawmakers vowed to work nonstop during the canvassing so the winners can be proclaimed this week. Our correspondent RJ Cruz will join us later on with an update on this. Leading presidential Bedford and Marcos Jr. continues to fill up his cabinet. The latest to accept offers from the Marcos camp are government veterans Arsenio Balisacan, Bienvenido Laguesma, and Susan Toots Oble. Balisacan, who chairs the Philippine Competition Commission, will again lead the National Economic Development Authority. Balisacan previously headed the agency during the administration of the late President Noynoy Aquino. The Estrada administration's former labor secretary, Bienvenido Laguesma, will also return to his previous post. Laguesma says his goal is to strengthen the cooperation between the labor sector and employers.
All the issues that are still burning issues today, yun din yung mga nakita ko noon, hindi lang siguro masyadong nabibigyan ng masyadong atensyon at hindi nagkakaroon talaga ng real partnership with the labor and the employer sector. Balance is a difficult thing to achieve, but with their trust, support, cooperation, I think any heavy burden will be lighter than expected.
Meanwhile, OFW rights advocate Susan Oble has agreed to head the Migrant Workers Department. Oble admits resources will be a problem at the newly formed agency.
Nothing stops us from working with the agencies already existing and putting together a team that would, you know, segue into the team of the department. When the department becomes fully constituted with a running budget of its own, then the POEA will serve as the backbone. It will no longer exist as POEA.
Yeah.
But its functions, I think most of the personnel who have been working so hard through the years will still be there. And then OWA is attached to the department. And then you will also have programs for the families of the OFWs, which presumptive President Bongbong Marcos has emphasized to me that he is cognizant of the social cost. Mm. Yung bang lalaki yung bata na isang magulang wala o parehong magulang wala.
House Deputy Speaker Boying Remulla vows to enforce a justice-for-all policy once he assumes his post as Justice Secretary under the Marcos administration. Katrina Domingo tells us more.
Presumptive President Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. has chosen Cavite 7th District Representative Jesus Crispin Remulla, more known as Boying, to become his Justice Secretary.
I think he will be very good. He has, as you know, he has a great many years of experience in government, number one. And what many people do not know is that he's actually a very, very good lawyer. And so I think he will fit very nicely into the DOJ.
Remulla says he has been close with Marcos as early as 2007 when both of them worked as lawmakers in the House of Representatives. During the recent campaign, Remulla was among the politicians who actively endorsed Marcos's presidential bid. Remulla has yet to outline his priorities as Justice Secretary, saying he has the entire month of June to assess whether or not the DOJ, under his leadership, would pursue investigations on President Rodrigo Duterte's drug war, which has killed thousands of suspects, including minors. Despite labeling some supporters of Vice President Lenny Robredo as either communist supporters or paid attendees in some Cavite rallies, Remulla says he is bent on enforcing a justice-for-all policy.
Karampi o kalapan, mayaman o mahirap, lahat sa basa't Pilipino, kahit na panyaga, kailangan irespeto natin ang kanilang karapatan.
Remulla and his clan, who are also involved in politics, successfully delivered some 1.12 million votes for Marcos in their bailiwick Cavite in the recently concluded national elections. When asked if the vote turnout for Marcos in Cavite was a factor in being given a cabinet post, Remulla says,
I didn't apply for it. Parang he was hinting to me already, parang kahit wala pa yung boto, that he wanted me there.
Cavite's 7th District Representative post will be vacated as soon as Remulla assumes leadership at the DOJ. He ran unopposed and won his re-election bid as congressman. So far, Remulla has yet to speak with current Justice Secretary Menardo Guevara. He says he needs to study the ins and outs of the DOJ so that the transition meeting can be more productive. Katrina Domingo, ABS-CBN News.
And we'll be speaking now with Congressman Boying Remulla on his new role as incoming Justice Secretary. Congressman, incoming Secretary, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon sa iyo, Carmina, at sa lahat ng nanonood at pakikinig sa atin.
Ano na ho bang pakiramdam ngayon na binigyan kayo ng ganitong kabigat na role, no, as incoming Justice Secretary, Congressman?
Alam niyo naman na kaming mga abogado, isa sa mga pangarap namin ay maging Justice Secretary o kaya Justice sa Supreme Court, no? Highest dream of any lawyer. Pero mas mahalaga siguro dito, marami akong maitutulong sa Pangulo, sa mga karanasan ko sa gobyerno, sapagkat napakaraming papel tungkol sa justice system ang umabot sa aking lamesa nung ako'y naglilingkod pa ng era of administration as Head of Legal Department of the Presidential Management Staff. Kaya mga bagay na hindi natuloy nung araw, hanggang ngayon pareho pa rin ang problema, mga solusyon na hindi ginamit dahil hindi walang political win ang mga sumunod na naging Pangulo.
Halimbawa po, ano pong mga solusyon nito at anong problema?
Hindi siguro umabot sa kanila yung mga ideya na dumating sa opisina namin na wala ang institutional continuity ng Office of the President. Kaya itong mga ideyang to hindi naman bago. I just want them to be implemented to improve the justice system.
Give us an example, Congressman.
Well, ang isa lang, no? Yung ating national crime information system na matagal nang nakapropose, na kung saan lahat ang database ng PNP, ng courts, ng ombudsman, ng NBI, lahat ng involved sa pursue ng justice ay pag-iisahin para ang tao kung kukuha ng clearance, isang opisina lang ang pupuntahan. Sa ngayon, hindi nagkakatugma ang mga record, kaya ang mga manggagawa na nais mag-apply sa trabaho, kinakailangan pumunta sa police, kukuha ng police clearance, pipila sa NBI, pupunta ng korte, ihingi ng court clearance. Ito naman dapat integrated na yan, pero nung araw, nagka-problema kami dyan sapagkat maraming ayaw pumayag. Nagkaroon ng mga turf war o kaya meron mga turf interest yung mga nakaupo ng mga secretaries ng panahon na yon at yung ibang mga old-timers. Mm-hmm. This time, I think, with a fresh mandate given to the President, it's about time we integrated the National Criminal Information System para makatulong naman sa ating bansa. Hindi lang dyan sa manggagawa, kundi sa paghuli rin ng mga tao. Lalo na sa pag-advance ng technology, pati facial recognition pwede mong ipasok. Kaya yun pa lang, simula lang yan, isa lang yan. No? Marami pa akong alam na pwede sabihin, Carmina, kung nais mong sabihin, kung tanongin.
We're going to have to skip that, and then we're going to move on to the next topic. How will the DOJ look like under your leadership? Alam niyo, Congressman, naging controversial kayo during the campaign period. We're going to talk about that later on. But tell us in your own words, how will the DOJ look like under a Remulla leadership?
Well, it will be an action field department, for sure. No? Ang mahalaga sa akin dito, yung aging ng dokumento, dapat hindi tumagal. Pagka ang dokumento ay dumating sa opisina, dapat alam natin kung sino, kung anong oras tinanggap, kung saan opisina ni Rafael, at kung sino ang in charge. Pag hindi na ayos yan, alam mo may problema sa taong may hawak ng dokumentong hindi naaksyonan. Pangalawa, yung cooperation with the Supreme Court and the other branches of the judicial system, ng the pillars of the justice system, siguro mas makakausap natin para mas maganda ang cooperation. Marami, Carmina, it will be an action field Department of Justice, I can assure you.
You said that during the campaign you had numerous instances when you had conversations with presumptive President Marcos Jr. What were these conversations like? And was there any point when you specifically volunteered your help in any capacity to the incoming administration?
Wala po. Ang una na namin pinag-usapan nung kampanya mismo, ang una niya sinabi sa akin, nung nakita niya ang dami ng taong sumasalubong sa kanya sa aming lalawigan, ang sabi niya, pag nanalo tayo dito, we cannot afford to fail. Kailangan, hindi natin pwedeng biguin ang taong bayan. Iyan ang naalala kong una niyang sinabi sa akin at hindi na yan wala sa aking isipan.
Hindi kailangan or hindi dapat biguin ang taong bayan. Yesterday morning, you said, Congressman Remulla, kaya nagkakaroon ng problema sa bayan, hindi nagkakaroon ng pag-aalsa. Hindi naman dahil sa poverty, but because of injustice. It's very interesting, Congressman Remulla, that you say that because there are some people who think that during the campaign period, you yourself, your face, was a face of injustice when you red-tagged, when you accused people and linked them to the communist movement. So the question now is...
Carmina, pwede ba? Sige,
tuloy ko lang po yung tanong ko. What kind of justice can people expect from someone like you, whom they consider as the face of injustice during the campaign period? How can your leadership now be very different from how you campaigned? Go ahead.
Ano yan eh? Unang-una, kailangan malaman ng taong bayan yung varying degrees of criminal responsibility, di ba?
Go ahead. Yeah, we're here. Go ahead.
Ang terrorism kasi, ang rebellion, terrorism, yan po ay krimen. At there are varying degrees of criminal responsibility. Merong principal, may accomplice, may accessory. Ang mga batang gagamitin nila sa simula, pag may nangyari at konektado sa krimen, hindi alam ng mga bata na sumasama sila sa grupo na masamang intensyon. Ang tawag mo dyan, red tagging. Ang tawag ko lang dyan, sinasabi ko lang ang katotohanan tungkol sa gawain ng mga terorista at kaaway ng bayan. Kaya kung saan tingin mo, red tagging yon, yan ay wala. Ganun talaga yan. Pero sabihin natin, I'm incoming Justice Secretary, probably ibang atmosphere na mangyayari doon, mas formal na siguro ang magiging usapan. Alam mo naman, nung nag-usap nung panahon na yon, panahon na eleksyon, mataas na simbolo yun ng damdamin, nakita ko talaga ang pagkilos, Carmina. Nakita ko silang kumilos. Kabisado ko, probinsya ko, tatlong taon ako naging gobernador. Hindi ko sasabihin ang aking sinabi kung hindi totoo yan.
Yun na nga po eh. It was in that conversation that we had when people really reacted to it because you said those things without an iota of proof, only believing what you believed in. So the fear now is, Congressman...
Ba't ka naman ganyan magsalita, Carmina? Without an iota of truth? Hindi naman ganun. Are you hosting a program or interviewing me? Or are you prosecuting me. Huwag naman ganun.
No, I'm not prosecuting you. You and I go a long way back, and I'm not that person who would persecute you on air. I'm just saying that that's what other people saw and heard when you uttered those words. So now let me ask you, how can this administration, your leadership as Justice Secretary, be very different from how you campaigned? Because the fear now, Congressman, is that you are now in a position where you can weaponize a whole department against those whom you've accused during the campaign period. That is their fear. What is your answer?
I do not ascribe to your thought that I will weaponize. You're talking about something like that. Carmina, I'm a professional. I'm a lawyer. I know the Bill of Rights. Ang red tagging is a political term, Carmina. I'm just unmasking them. Sinasabi ko lang ang totoo. Ngayon, na ako ang magiging chairman ng Anti-Terror Council under the Department of Justice, siyempre, formal na atmosphere yan, hindi political, ibang usapan yan. At lagi na lang nakabantay ang departamento para bantayan ang karapatan ng taong bayan. Ayun ang masasabi ko dyan.
Mm-mm. Pag sinabi po bang ibang usapan na yan, formal na, anong itsura nito sa mga maaakusahan na mga terorista?
Carmina, meron tayong due process, Carmina. Darating tayo sa due process. Iyan ay magkakaroon ng an information will be filed. There will be a preliminary investigation. They will go through the whole process kung may problema. That's how the law works. Diba?
And that's what the fear of some are. So what can you tell them now allay these fears? Go ahead.
Well, I am a professional, Carmina. And I have worked many offices in my life. I've always been a professional. If the political atmosphere is very heated, if many of them cannot accept the fact that we have a newly elected president, isa lang pakiusap ko, Carmina, para sa bayan natin, di ba? Please allow our country to succeed. Huwag tayo magbangayan na nagsisimula pa lang lahat, hindi pa nagsisimula. Parang gusto nyo na naman kaming durugin. Hindi ganun, Carmina. Mahalin natin ang Pilipinas. Mahalin natin ang ating bayan.
Yan ho ba ang perception nyo ngayon that those who are critical, those who have legitimate dissent, are already out to discredit the government?
Well, some of the political losers are that way, no? Alam mo naman sa Pilipinas, wala namang natatalo rito. Sinasabi lagi na daya o anuman no? Ayaw tanggapin na ang kaya nga tayo demokrasya, namimili ang majority ng leader natin. Di ba? Kaya, parang ano ba to? Am I being accused of anything now? Or are you weaponizing me now?
Oh, not at all. We just want to get a glimpse of what the DOJ will look like under your leadership.
The DOJ will be a working outfit. I can assure you that. And we will respect the rights of our people. And even, of course, lahat ng tao, pati foreigners, iragalang natin ang kanilang karapatan. I respect the Constitution, Carmina. In fact, I consider myself a constitutionalist.
And finally, incoming Justice Secretary, actually, I do have some more questions for you. When you talk about the outgoing presidency or outgoing President Rodrigo Duterte, how do you then disabuse the minds of many that you will use your position to protect another president that you were loyal to, and that's outgoing President Rodrigo Duterte, Congressman?
Carmina, I served the president as the representative of Cavite. I never went to Malacanang to even visit the president for a personal matter. I was never close to him. I never got instructions from him. I did everything. Ayun ang masasabi ko sa iyo. We are not there to protect anybody. We are here to make sure that the country moves forward. Please allow us to make the country succeed. Yun lang po ang aking pakiusap.
And I wish you all the best. We're going to have to leave it at that. Congressman Boying Remulla there, incoming Justice Secretary, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. Take care and keep safe.
Maraming salamat. Magandang hapon sa iyo. Magandang hapon.
We're going to take a break now. We'll tackle the possibility of the incoming Marcos administration reviving the country's nuclear energy program. Stay with Dateline Philippines. You're on ANC. Back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Congress set to begin tallying the votes for president and vice president in the May 9 polls. The incoming heads of the Labor and Migrant Worker Departments laid out their plans under the Marcos administration. Meanwhile, incoming Justice Secretary Boying Remulla vows to respect human rights amid criticisms over his red tagging of government critics. Leading presidential bet Ferdinand Marcos Jr. open to reviving the Philippines' nuclear energy program. And the chief of the International Monetary Fund says the global economy is now facing its biggest challenge since World War II. Back with more news, Congress has convened as the National Board of Canvassers to count the votes for president and vice president in the May 9 elections. The tandem of Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Sara Duterte Carpio topped the unofficial tally by a wide margin. Our very own RG Cruz now joins us live from the Batasang Pambansa with details. RG, over to you.
Carmina, good afternoon. The Congress has convened a joint public session of the Senate and the House of Representatives, sitting as the National Board of Canvassers for President and Vice President. Senate President Vicente Soto III and Speaker Lord Alan Velasco convened their respective chambers. 20 senators and 296 congressmen responded to the roll call. Thus, the presence of a quorum was declared. The joint session then approved the rules of the joint public session for the canvassing, which appear to be similar to the 2016 rules. So far, one major difference is the rules allowed the boards of canvassers to explain discrepancies in the certificates of canvass through any forms of communication that the Congress deemed safe and reliable. In the 2016 rules, physical presence was required. The joint session then proceeded to create a 14-man joint canvassing committee that will actually canvass the votes. Senate Majority Leader Miguel Zubiri and the House Majority Leader Martin Romualdez will chair the respective panels. Regular members for the Senate are Senators Franklin Drilon, Nancy Binay, Amy Marcos, Grace Poe, Ralph Recto, and Pia Cayetano. Regular members for the House are Representatives Jesus Crispin Remulla, Abraham Tolentino, Christine Singson Mihan, Sharon Garin, Manuel Jose Dalipe, and Juliet Ferrer. Alternate members for the Senate are Senators Dito Lapid, Risa Ontiveros, Coco Pimentel, and Ronald De La Rosa. Alternate members for the House are Juan Pablo Bondoc, Johnny Pimentel, Alfredo Garbin Jr., and Stella Kimbo. The rules forbid a member of Congress who is a candidate for President and Vice President or Vice President from membership in the Joint Committee. However, two relatives of leading presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr., his sister Senator Amy Marcos, and first cousin Representative Romualdez are members of the committee. The joint session then opened the certificates of canvass and supporting documents for turnover to the committee. The committee will actually canvass the votes for president and vice president. The joint committee shall decide on all questions and issues raised involving the COCs. Now, I'd like to point out that Senate President Soto reported at the start of the joint public session that when they initialized the CCS, the report yielded zero votes in the number of COCs reported, which means that there was no pre-programmed result into the CCS. Soto also reported that the first local COC that the Senate received was from Malabon City. The first overseas absentee voting COC was from Cambodia. And the first electronically received COC in the CCS server was from San Juan City. He also reported that there are 157 certificates of canvass that have been received so far out of the 173 that are expected, which means that there are still 16 COCs which are pending. The joint public session then authorized the Senate Secretary, the House Secretary General, to open all certificates of canvass for turnover to the Joint Committee. After that, the joint public session was then suspended to give way to the committee proceedings. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. RG Cruz there joining us live from the Batasang Pambansa. Thanks, RG. Take care and keep safe. Back here in the newsroom, tight security implemented in Tubaran, Lanao del Sur, for the conduct of the special elections there. Roxanne Arevalo now joins us with that story. Roxanne, over to you.
Yes, Carmina, many voters came and the special elections in Tubaran Town in Lanao del Sur started on time this morning. The elections is being secured not only by 103rd Brigade of the Philippine Army, but personnel of the Explosive Ordnance Unit, Special Action Force, Regional Mobile Force Battalion, Provincial Mobile Force Company, and the Philippine Air Force were also deployed in the area. Earlier today, the Philippine Air Force conducted persuasion flights with their Super Tucano attack aircraft to remind residents that they are also securing the airspace and are ready to help the troops securing the ground if needed. Authorities say this is to ensure a peaceful and orderly special elections today. On the ground, voters line up and right in front of them are policemen in their helmets and shields, facilitating the entry of voters to the voting centers. Outside the precincts are waiting areas for residents who have yet to vote. More than 6,000 residents from 12 barangays are expected to vote today. The voting precincts would be closing at 7 o'clock tonight. 103rd Brigade Commander General Jose Maria Cuepo said the canvassing will also be done in Tubaran unless they're unable to transmit. They would have to bring the election paraphernalia to the provincial capital in Marawi City as stated in the Comelec and Bank resolution. Roxana Levalo, ABS-CBN News.
Thanks a lot, Roxanne. Presidential race frontrunner Ferdinand Marcos Jr. says there is a need to boost the partnership of the Philippines with the U.S. in terms of trade and not just assistance. Marcos made that statement after meeting with U.S. Chargé d'Affaires Heather Variava, who paid him a courtesy visit Monday. His pitch comes as Marcos seeks to lure more investors to public-private partnership deals under his incoming administration.
We would welcome any assistance for the economy that we can get from the United States. But I think that not only a dependence on aid from the United States, but also in trade not aid, balik pa rin tayo doon, trade not aid. And so to open the government, the bureaucracy, this administration, to the possibilities of private partnerships, joint venture from the Philippines and with the American. Marami naman tayong history sa ganyan. Marami nang nagbubukas dito na kumpanya na American for a long time now. So that is a well-established route or role that we have.
In 2020, the Philippines was the 30th largest goods export market of the U.S. Meanwhile, the U.S. foreign direct investments in the Philippines was at $5.2 billion during that same period. Well, Marcos Jr. opened to reviving the Philippines' nuclear energy program. Marcos said he discussed the possible revival of the Bataan nuclear power plant with South Korea's ambassador Monday.
Pinag-usapan din namin with the South Korean ambassador, napag-usapan din namin yung offer nila at yung nakapunta na rito ng mga expert na nuclear power para tignan ang Bataan Nuclear Power Plant para makita kung ano ba ang maaring gawin. Pwede pa bang ituloy o kailangan na magtayo ng bago? What are the things that we will have to do? So, binuhay namin ulit ang diskusyon na yon. Although they have come before, we will now study their recommendations and their findings, and we will see if we can still apply.
The plant was built during the regime of his father, the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos Sr. President Rodrigo Duterte agrees with the younger Marcos, saying the next administration should explore nuclear energy amid rising oil prices. But the president also warned his successor of the risks.
Total ang nag-umpisa naman nito kasi Marcos noon. Nagpagawa siya ng nuclear plant. Nuclear is forever. Kaya lang, medyo delikado to. Kagaya na nga sa Chernobyl ng Ukraine, nagkaroon ng leak.
So should the incoming administration revive the Philippines' nuclear energy program? For a discussion on this, we're now joined by Alberto de Luzong III. He's the Energy Transition Advisor of the Institute for Climate and Sustainable Cities. Bert, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, great to be back, Carmina.
All right. So you heard it from presumptive President Marcos Jr. What do you make of the plan to revisit the BNPP? Is it still viable?
Well, I think that as an energy planner myself, I would be open to doing these studies. to maybe settle the issue once and for all. I suppose that they will not just look at the power plant itself, but look at the other objections to the power plant, including the the geologic conditions around the power plant that have been apparently a cause of the safety concerns. So I'm in favor of studying this matter and finally settling the issue.
Mm. What will it take, though, to rehabilitate it, if it can still be rehabilitated, or maybe even build a new one, Bert?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a very old plant. And we know that it's the same plant that the Fukushima power plant was built on. So it's a very old plant. As a mechanical engineer, I know you can rebuild anything mechanical, but at what cost? So I've always said that, okay, we'll study all of this and figure out exactly where it is in the in the choices that we have for our energy sector. Now, Carmina, I don't know if you realize that I was part of the Marcos administration as a civil servant between 1982 and 1986. I was at the Ministry of Energy at Planning Service. And one of the jobs that I, you know, the task that I was doing is doing energy briefings on the program of government at the time. Mm. And while nuclear was certainly a major, a significant project, the main projects of the government were geothermal and hydro, which we developed. In fact, at that time, we were not from nothing. We were number two in geothermal in the world in a very short period of time. Mm. That was what the government then was able to accomplish.
So that is a perfect segue to our discussion, because I also asked you to come today because I just didn't want to focus on the BNPP. I wanted to focus on the entire energy mix and moving forward. So the whole concept, though, of adding nuclear into the energy mix, Bert, is it flexible enough? How rigid is the system that it can accommodate or respond to the consumption needs of the growing population?
Well, it's not flexible. It is the most inflexible, the most rigid type of power plant. If you build a nuclear power plant, you operate it at its capacity and you don't ramp it up, you don't ramp it down. Now, I think I've said before that that's not what our grid needs. What our grid needs is more distributed because we're an archipelago with flexible generation. And I think that a lot of other options are available to the Philippines today, particularly with the fall in the prices of solar and wind, with the recent report of the World Bank saying that we have the largest offshore wind capacity potential in Southeast Asia. With the, I was listening to President Duterte, and he said nuclear is forever. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to say that nuclear is a physical plant, and we know that there is no physical plant that is forever. Mm. But there is a forever in our energy, and that's geothermal, because it is a, the geothermal energy, if you truly understand it, then you know that it's a physical phenomenon where the heat from the middle of the earth is able to heat flowing water, and if you harness that in a sustainable manner, then this can be a quote-unquote forever resource. Now, in Italy, Larderello, they've been developing the same fields for, more than 100 years. Mm. So I think that there are these options available, and the new administration would do well to look at all of these options.
Mm. But since you laid it out quite clearly before us today, Bert, would it be prudent enough to put the resources straight into geothermal, other renewable, sustainable sources of energy, instead of trying to revisit the BNPP, possibly looking at building a new one? Would it be prudent to do that instead?
Well, if you're asking me for an opinion, I would say yes, that would be prudent. Given the history of nuclear being a resource that is, quote-unquote, takes time to develop. what we need in the Philippines is an additional quick infusion of new capacity. And you do that by other sources that we've been able to do before. For example, we were able to add, 800 megawatts of solar in a few years, 400 megawatts of wind in the same time period. We have geothermal, like I said.
Let's zero in on that, Britt, because the presumptive president also touched on that quite a bit during his press conference yesterday. He said that the lead time is 3 to 5 years. I wasn't sure if he was talking about just building a nuclear power plant or other plants for renewable sources of energy. But is that really the case, a lead time of 3 to 5 years, or can we make that shorter?
Well, that's probably the best case scenario, and a scenario where I think I've not seen in any previous nuclear power plant. Maybe he's looking at the fact that the nuclear power plant has been built. But remember, we do not just comply with local rules and regulations and standards. We have to comply with international standards. If we're talking of a nuclear power plant, not just on the plant itself, but on the people that are running it, that will run it.
All right. So, but in terms of the time period in building plants, whether it's geothermal or are the other options that we were talking about a while ago, is it also that kind of a lead time, 3 to 5 years, or is it shorter?
No.
Go ahead.
Well, solar, 6 months, 8 months for 100 megawatts, easy. Wind, what takes the longest period is probably the 1 to 2 year wind monitoring. But building the wind farm, maybe a year, year and a half. Geothermal, remember, we're talking of geothermal that's already there. We are redeveloping geothermal using newer technology. So old fields, new technology. So you're talking of 2 years, 3 years tops probably for those. Mm. So a lot quicker than any nuclear option that I can think of.
All right, let's talk about climate change now, Bert. Another matter that's close to your heart. Let's listen to what presumptive President Marcos Jr. said about climate change in his press con yesterday. May we ask the control booth to roll that tape, please?
First subjects that we came upon were the assistances that the United States is offering to mitigate climate change in different countries. At very active sila, they want to take a leadership role in the mitigation of the effects of climate change, of global warming. And I said, that became, nung nakita ko sa brief na yun ang kanilang ginagawa, ay nakita ko kagad kasi napakataas natin, top 3 tayo sa at risk sa climate change. So that's immediately of great interest.
All right, Bert. Two things here. Number one, is mitigation enough? And number two, we have a vibrant community of climate warriors here in the Philippines, or actually a leader in terms of the vulnerable nations all over the world. Why even look to the U.S. for leadership when we can look to our own warriors? Go ahead, Bert.
Yes, well, I think it's important that we encourage the U.S. and the Western countries to look at the opportunities of investment, in fact, in those energy supplies that will help us reduce climate change in the world. All of those technologies we talked about earlier, solar, wind, geothermal, hydro. But I think that there is a new area developing very, very quickly, and that's offshore wind, where we are like the largest, we have the largest potential in Southeast Asia. All of these countries can come invest in our offshore wind potential, invest in our modernization of our grid to be able to harness this potential. This is the way where we can maximize the value of the Western world into our own ability to address the climate change issue. Mm.
Which brings me to my next question, Bert. Should the climate and energy agenda be seen as separate and distinct from each other?
You know, the way I see it, it's sort of like intertwined. it so happens that when we do least cost energy development in the Philippines today, we are also almost as a result of our choices on economic costs, then we are doing the same choices that we would have arrived at if we were looking primarily at environmental considerations. Now, again, Carmina, I was part of the Ministry of Energy before. There were three major objectives of the energy plan: supply objective, efficiency objective, and the third, even then, was environmental objective. Mm. So I think that maganda now, whether you go aim for climate change or least cost energy supply, the program will be the same.
Well, those objectives that you just mentioned sort of leads us to our final question. Bert, former NEDA Secretary General Arsenio Balisacan off to assume the post that he assumed before, back to the NEDA seat. What is the role of energy security in the rehabilitation and recovery of the economy post-pandemic? Because if climate and energy are intertwined, I'm guessing as well that you put economy into the mix, and we're looking at a whole web of interdependence here. Go ahead, Bert.
Yes, precisely, because energy is what? The engine of economic growth. No energy, you stifle economic growth. We see that problem in our off-grid areas in the Philippines. Now, with a reliable, secure, cost-effective energy sector, then our economy can really, really grow. I mean, the event that I'm here now is for off-grid. And I can see in those areas without any energy supply, you can practically double, triple, even 10 times increase the revenues of those local communities if you have reliable energy.
So with Arsenio Balisacan back at the helm, do you think that he will be able to synergize all these objectives with a one goal of further development in the nation?
Well, you know, the first step in energy planning is really to align with the national plans and objectives. And I think what you need is a very good economic team, NEDA, DOE, DOF, and all of the others, DTI, in order to come up with a program that will really work synergistically. But definitely energy is a main ingredient in all of these plans.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. We ran out of time. Alberto de Luzon III, Energy Advisor of the Institute for Climate and Sustainable Cities. Always a pleasure talking to you, Bert. Thanks again. Take care and keep safe.
Thanks, and likewise, Camille.
And back here in the newsroom, here's the latest on the tragic ferry fire off the waters of Quezon Province. The initial investigation shows that the blaze that killed 7 people may not have started in the engine room. The Philippine Coast Guard echoed the vessel's owner's earlier claim, but the PCG assured the public all angles are being investigated and charges will be filed if necessary.
Initial na narinig natin, base dun sa deklarasyon ng mga nakausap nating pasahero, meron silang narinig na pagsabog sa engine room. Pero tinitingnan din natin kasi buhay din naman yung crew na nasa ilalim ng engine room, kaya hindi rin maaaring sa engine. So lahat po ay titignan natin. Maaari pong makansela yung prangkisa nila at maaari pong silang mapailan ng criminal liability kung sakali pong lumabas sa investigation na meron pong kapabayaan.
The MV Mercraft II left Pulilio Island with 134 people on board. It caught fire just 500 yards near the port of Rial early Monday morning. 24 people were injured. 3 are in critical condition. A court in Kyiv has found Russian soldier Vadim Shishimarin guilty of war crimes. The court sentenced him to life in prison in the first war crimes trial since Russia's invasion. He admitted to killing 62-year-old civilian Oleksandr Shevlepov under the orders of a soldier of higher rank in the first days of Moscow's offensive in northeast Ukraine. Kyiv has accused Moscow of atrocities and brutality against civilians during the invasion and said it has identified more than 10,000 possible war crimes, but Russia denies these allegations. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appeals for more weapons for his country as he addressed the World Economic Forum in Davos via video link. According to Zelensky, thousands of lives could have been saved if only Ukraine had received 100% of their weapons needs at the start of the Russian invasion. He also told world leaders at the forum to stop all trade with Russia. Western powers have imposed a slew of sanctions on Russia, but while the U.S., Britain and Canada have moved to ban Russian oil and gas, the European Union has been divided over imposing similar measures. A dire warning from the International Monetary Fund during the World Economic Forum in Davos, IMF Chief Kristalina Georgieva said the economic horizon has darkened. She said the global economy is facing what she called its biggest test since the Second World War, with the fallout from the pandemic, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and supply chain issues. A bright spot, Georgieva said, is that right now there is no clear risk of a global recession.
We have downgraded our projections for growth for this year in April for 143 countries. This is 86% of global GDP. And since then, in a short period of time, a little bit like the weather here in Davos, the horizon has darkened. We are looking down this 2022. It is going to be a tough year. We have commodity price shock in many countries, and the particular shock I want to bring your attention to is food price shock.
In April, the IMF slashed its global growth outlook for the second time this year to 3.6% from 4.4%. It cited the ongoing war in Ukraine and rapid inflation as clear economic risks for many countries. Pfizer and BioNTech say their COVID-19 vaccine generated a strong immune response in children under 5 years old. Clinical trial data showed three shots of smaller vaccine doses are safe and well-tolerated among the participants. Over 1,600 children aged 6 months to under 5 years participated in the trial. The drug maker said they plan to soon ask global regulators to authorize the shot for that age group. They expect to submit their latest data to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration this week. The Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine is currently authorized for use in all Americans aged 5 and older. Philippine health officials see a slight uptick in new COVID cases in the country the week after the elections. The country averaged 173 new infections from May 16 to 22. This was 9.9% higher compared from the previous week. Six COVID deaths were also confirmed during the period, but local experts believe the increase was not brought about by the recently concluded polls, but because of the highly infectious Omicron subvariant.
BA4 is the lineage of the current Omicron. This is the variant that is being considered by the European CDC as a variant of concern because of its advantage in terms of growth, so meaning higher transmissibility. And in fact, this is the current variant of concern now that is causing surge of cases in South Africa and in Portugal, no? And slowly increase in the number of cases. And in fact, there are speculations that with this advantage in the growth and transmissibility, it might be able to be a dominant variant in some of these countries.
The Philippine Health Department heightens its monitoring of monkeypox. During a briefing with President Duterte on Monday, the DOH said it has adopted a four-door strategy in intensifying border control to keep the virus out of the country.
Ating pagtitibayin ang screening process sa ating mga borders upang maiwasan ang pagpasok ng monkeypox sa bansa. Ang tinding pong hinihimok ang mahigit na mahigpit na pagsunod sa ating minimum public health standards.
The risk of monkeypox spreading widely among the general population is very low. That assurance coming from the European Center for Disease Prevention and Control. So far, less than 200 confirmed and suspected cases have been recorded since early May in Australia, Europe, and North America. But the World Health Organization says the outbreaks in non-endemic countries can be contained and human-to-human transmission of the virus can be stopped. In sports, the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals is all tied up. The Boston Celtics got off to a jackrabbit start to beat the Miami Heat with ease in Game 4, 102-82. All-star Jason Tatum led the Celtics with 31 points. For the best-of-seven series tied at 2 games apiece, both teams now travel back to Miami for the 5th game of their series. A new report shows video sharing apps are widely popular among Filipino kids. Cybersecurity firm Kaspersky says Filipino children spend the most time on YouTube, followed by TikTok. The rest of the top 5 most used applications are Messenger, Roblox, and Facebook. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.